what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, are meeting them, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So, good to see you all on this public holiday. We weren't sure if people would turn up today, but we thought we'd do it anyway, and glad we did, because everyone's here. Is anyone here for the first time? No. No one's here for the first time. Okay, cool, easy. Anyone?
Trent, you are the first one again.
Yeah, just one. Just one. Okay. No worries. So, so I was just thinking about what I should talk about today, and I think last week I was talking about the beginning of the meditation. I think Bill was asking a question about what I kind of mean when I say settling into the meditation. So I like to spend the first couple of minutes when I sit down not to really give any instructions to the mind, just to sit there and just like walk into a dim room from the sunlight outside. You know, you have to spend a couple of minutes when you start to meditate, when you close your eyes, to see the room inside your mind. You know, what's going on there? What's sort of happening? So, but also the time at the beginning of the meditation is when we can practice what Ajahn Brahm calls programming the gatekeeper. So. I think this story is in his book. It was called Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond. It's recently been republished as Happiness Through Meditation. He talks about the rich man who he's got this big mansion and it's got walls all around it, you know, 10 feet high, so no one can climb up. But there's a gate, and the gatekeepers there. His job is to look after the mansion. So the gatekeeper has to be very, very mindful. So he one day the rich man tells the gatekeeper to stay there and be very mindful. And yes, and the rich man goes off to do his business. And he comes back to his mansion. And everything's gone. There's no jewelry. There's no piano. The piano's gone. And the TV's gone. He's a really rich man, so it's much bigger than that TV. It's a real serious TV. And he's furious. So he says to the gatekeeper, he says, you know, what happened? I told you to be mindful. And the gatekeeper says, well, I was perfectly mindful. I was mindful when they walked right in. I was mindful when they took the piano out. When they walked back in, I was very, very mindful. And when they walked out with the jewellery, very, very mindful. And he says, the rich man says, oh, sorry, I should have told you. You've got to keep the bad guys out and let the good guys in, all the good people in. And the gatekeeper says, oh, sorry about that. And the next day, when the rich man's got all of his, got his insurance paid out and he's got his piano back, he knows he can leave the mansion and everything will be safe inside for the with the gatekeeper there. So that's the story of Ajahn Brahm, but actually it's based in the suttas. It's actually based in the Buddha scriptures, where the Buddha actually called mindfulness the gatekeeper, and he's allowed to let in the good guys. In the suttas, a swift pair of messengers comes to the castle and the gatekeeper lets him in. That's Samatha Vipassana. And obviously, you know, the things you want to keep out is like the five hindrances, basically. So which I won't go into in too much depth at the moment, but maybe for another talk we can talk about the five hindrances. So I was thinking about this from a practical perspective. Again, in the suttas, the Buddha's talking to a Brahmin. So this guy who does lots and lots of chanting, and he says, you know, sometimes it's really, really easy to remember all the chanting, and sometimes it's really hard. And the Buddha said, yes, the difference is, you know, sometimes you've got mindfulness and sometimes you don't. And this is actually very practical advice. So when people come each day to feed me and Santuti and Prakhe, Papke, with lovely vegetarian food today. Good vegetarian food. So. We give a chant. We do the a fairly long chant just to bless the people who have come for the meal, to say thank you and wish them well, good health, and so forth. And at the end of that chant, there's three stanzas. They say. I'm trying to remember them now. Bodhisattva Mangalang Rakantu Sabha Devata Sabha Buddha Nubhavena Sada Soti Bhavantu Te. Now, if you're chanting this every day for the last 12 years or so, what, 2008? Yeah, 11 years. Yeah. You've chanted this chant over and over again. It's really easy to do it on autopilot. Right? So. So you're chanting, you just chant it over and over again, it's like, yeah. But when you get to these three stanzas, it's very easy to lose your place, because that chant that I said has only has one part in it that differs in each of the three stanzas, the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. And what often happens is you'll be on autopilot, you'll be not mindful, and you'll get to about the middle stanza and you'll think, oh, I've been chanting for a while now. It must be the Sangha stanza. And you go, nope, got it wrong. And it can become a habit. You get this habit of just chanting the wrong thing. And when you're at Bodhinyana and there's 20 monks, it's very easy for people to miss that out. But when there's only two monks here, it's a little more obvious. And this isn't specifically me. I know that the monk that used to sit next to me when I was at Bodhinyana does the same thing. We kind of alternate. One of us gets it right one day, one of us gets it wrong the next day. And because you're on autopilot as you chant. And I've even heard Ajahn Brahmali say that in the very old days, when Ajahn Gyanadhamma was living at Bodhnyana, he's an Australian monk living in Thailand now, he said to Ajahn Brahmali, he says, okay, so when that happens, when you're not sure where you are, you're probably the Dharma, right? It's probably the Dharma stanza, the middle one, because you always think it's gone faster than it has. And that didn't work for me, because I get to the end stanza and think, oh, it must be the Dharma now, I've got to get that wrong. So that didn't work. So trying to use that trick didn't work. And I found that often I'd sit down, especially here, and I'd say, well, okay, this time I'm going to get it right, this time I'm going to get it right. But by the time you get to the end of that chant, you've forgotten. Your mind has wandered off. And that's kind of the nature of mindfulness, or the lack of. So in the end, I just came up with a very simple thing. I thought, all you have to remember is Buddha Dhamma Sangha. That's all you have to remember. And now, when I begin the chant, we'll sort of start chanting. I might be on autopilot, which is fine, but I'll suddenly remember, oh, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, yeah. And when I get to those three stanzas, it works. I don't miss chant anymore. Even though while you're chanting, you might be thinking about other things. But when the time comes and you get to that stanza, the program that you've done for your mind kicks in. It's really quite... amazing how well that works. So when we sit down and meditate, there's often that first couple of minutes when you start meditating, you know, after you've just let things settle down and the lights turn up in your mind, not literal lights or nimittas or anything, but just, you know, a little bit more awareness of what's going on in your head. And that's the time when you can actually say to yourself, oh, you know, what does the mind need now? What's my need? Today I was thinking, well, you know, yesterday when I meditated, I might be a little disgruntled, just grumpy sort of thing. And I thought, well, and when I sat down to meditate today in the afternoon, I told myself to program the mind. This is good enough. And that was it. Something very, very simple like that. That was good. It is. It actually works when you meditate and you come to that point that you wanted to address in the mind, the discontent, whatever. It's like, oh, okay, no, this is good enough. This is good enough. Okay, cool. And even though a lot of the time when we're meditating, we're on autopilot and we might be thinking about things, that sort of thing. But then when there's something comes up that you want to let go of, you've already programmed the mind. And that's at the very beginning of meditation, and that's all you need to do. You don't need to keep repeating through meditation, this is good enough. It's enough that you've taken the time at the beginning of the meditation just to instruct the mind. And we can use that technique for perhaps if we're watching the breath and we need to, you're wishing the coarse breath would be fine, you know, you just say, oh, no, the coarse breath is good enough. You can say that, but at the beginning of the meditation. And then you just let go and just enjoy the meditation. And strangely, you know, when these problems arise in meditation, there's always problems in meditation. And that's it. It's like a whole series of puzzles, I think, the process of meditation. So that's the time at the beginning of the meditation, just to address perhaps what happened when you last meditated. And it is actually very effective. So that's just another tool for your belt as a meditator. Any questions? Oh. Yeah, Bob.
You define it as the gatekeeper, but I can't find the gate, let alone the gatekeeper.
Well, I didn't do that. It's a Buddha. Yeah. You can't blame it on me.
When I shut my eyes to begin meditation, it's just me.
Indeed. So, we're talking about something that is kind of metaphorical. It's metaphorical, so I'm sure your meditation's not perfect. Is that right? I know Bob's really self-deprecating, so it's all right. But it's very probably the best thing to do is just to look at what gives you the most difficulty in meditation, and just to address it with its opposite. Yeah, that's probably the easiest thing to do, is just to think, well, you know, what happened in my last minute? What's been happening over the last few weeks as I've been meditating? And what's come up? What's been the biggest problem? And you can, just develop its opposite. And it helps when you program the mind just to use something very simple like Buddha Dhamma Sangha, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and that's it. Like I said, it's almost like a whole series of puzzles. You know, you sort of undo one knot at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. With patience. But it's true, because, you know, this whole process of meditation is sort of going somewhere, right? Mm. So it's leading you to states of peace, states of kindness, states of gentleness. And, we just have to, have to tackle it sort of one knot at a time. But you don't have to. You don't have to use this technique. It's just one more thing to try. Ajahnana Dhamma's trick didn't work for me. Didn't work for me. But it works for some people. So, sometimes you just need to find your own trick that works for you.
Thank you, Ajahn.
No worries. I wouldn't make things too complicated.
Sorry.
No, that's right. It's my bad. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. So, any more questions? Has anyone not meditated before? Everyone's meditated before, I think. You're all fairly. It's all the regulars. So. I think.
Okay.
Yeah?
He hasn't. He's never been meditated before.
Never meditated before?
Yeah.
That's right. It's pretty easy. usually. With the Monday night group, it's pretty relaxed. We've got half an hour of meditation. And who are you pointing at? You know? Anyway, so I have a pretty relaxed attitude to meditation. I tend to sort of take it as it comes. So you guys don't have to do anything. You just sit there, and we'll sit for about 30 minutes, and. I'll say a few words, but I think tonight probably the best thing to do is just to maybe develop a bit of contentment tonight. Just meditate on contentment. Yeah, we can use the use the phrase, this is good enough. This is good enough. Relax. Take it easy. Enjoy the aircon, because it's really hot outside and it's nice and cool inside. So we can be very calm and relaxed. Shall we dim the lights? And next week we'll have something completely different with the Venerable Hearers. Yeah, all good. Good. So. Take a couple of minutes to. Close our eyes and become aware of what's happening between our ears. What's going on? going on in your mind? Whatever arises and passes away, just remind yourself that this is good enough. Enjoy the nice cool room, a nice soft chair, a nice soft cushion. Enjoy the quiet, nice peaceful room, away from the busy places. Just letting the mind slow down. Let it unwind. Peaceful, quiet mind, while the agitated mind, worried mind, just remember, this is good enough, this is good enough, this is good enough. Just allow the contentment to grow. This is good enough. Yes, it's good enough. from contentment comes happiness. Little by little. Is that good enough? Good enough. All right. Sign. Does anyone have any questions about meditation?
Just to say that this is good enough, I found really useful for blocking my usual self-judgment that it's not good enough,
indeed,
or I'm not good enough, or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good let-go mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Works. Yep.
And really the whole point there is just to, let go of negativity. Because Ajahn Brahm said that, gave a talk a long time ago, saying, the antidote to all the hindrances is contentment. So, and you're quite right, we tend to be, as meditators, we tend to be a bit self-judgmental, always saying, am I doing this right? And if you're just starting out, you always have these questions, am I doing this right? Yeah. This is meditation. It's a strange beast, but to start with, you just have that kindness towards yourself, because the development of peace and happiness is a long process, so you have to give yourself the time to grow in the practice and to. I like Ajahn's simile of the guy who goes to work every day or 5 days a week and goes in on Monday and works all day and doesn't get paid. Same on Tuesday, same on Wednesday, same on Thursday, and Friday comes and he knocks off early and gets a paycheck. So that's often how meditation works. If you find that discontent is a problem, it's always a good idea just to remind yourself that you're good enough. You are good enough as a meditator. It's just the nature of the beast.
I wish I had school reports like that. This is good enough.
Exactly. Yeah. sounds sort of Montessori like, I think, but. Yeah. No, I didn't get very good report cards when I was a kid, so messing around too much. But I still had my strong points. I think my year 12 reference from the school, the school headmaster said, started out by saying, Oliver's not the most academic of boys. I went to North Sydney Boys in North Sydney, obviously. It was a selective school, so surrounded by the brightest of the bright. But unfortunately, at the time, it wasn't always directed in the right direction. So it was full of people from those who are really academically minded to go out and, just study really hard and... get all the good marks, then there are others who are extremely bright but just weren't interested. So I think I did better in uni than I did in school. I got to do something that I was interested in. In the end, if you're giving yourself a report card at the end of the meditation, you should always say, Bill has his good. Bill was good enough. Bill was good enough. Just good. As a teacher, you have to kind of be good enough as well, because we're not Elijah and Brahm. I had my first funeral on Wednesday, so Ajahn Brahm gave us a call and said, there's a funeral in Kelmscott. It's simply funerals. So Friday before last I met with the daughter and the wife of the deceased. He was a Malaysian man in his 80s. He was has sort of Taoist leanings, but was not particularly strongly religious in it, really. But the daughter decided that she didn't want a priest doing the ceremony. So I think someone at her work recommended Ajahn Brahm. So Ajahn Brahm said, "Oh well, you know, it's in your area. Give us a call," and says, "Oh, you know, why don't you guys do it?" So I said, "Okay." So I met with the family on the Friday before, and we went to Simply Funerals out in Kelmscott. And it's a fairly simple place. It's not it's a no frills funeral home. We agreed that I'd do some chanting and maybe give a bit of explanation, that sort of thing. I'm like, "Ah, oh, right, okay." And you know, "Oh, what's your part in this?" I said to Glenn from Simply Funerals. "Oh, I'm just sort of the MC sort of thing." I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool. So I got there a little bit early, just as about halfway through the viewing. They had half an hour just to view the corpse and say goodbye and everything. And then it was time for the ceremony. And I'd go in there and sit down, and then Glenn disappears. He just walked out, closes the door. I'm like, "What? Not even a segue?" So my first funeral, I had to get up there, and his wife was just normal Caucasian Australian. You know, lives up in Rolling Stone, as it happens, and it's like all these people that probably had very little to do with Buddhism at all. I'm like, "Okay," and I chanted the Metta Sutta, as we chanted the Metta Sutta at the beginning. So I did it in Pali, and I managed to do it perfect. But I don't think I've ever chanted the Metta Sutta so with such a high pulse rate. I was so anxious. I was so anxious up there. So, and but it was funny afterwards. Yeah, when I first sat down, I was sitting next to the wife of the brother. She's an Asian lady, and she says, "Oh yeah, Ajahn Brahm did my grandfather's funeral," and then afterwards, yeah, just talking to all sorts of different people. I got told off by one person, but only one person. He said, "You came up to me and said, 'Would have been good if I could hear what you said.'" I said, "Okay, good, sure." I asked a couple other people. I said, "Did you hear me?" They said, "Yeah, no problem." So I don't know, just one grumpy person. So that's all right. He might have been deaf. That's right. So you know, you're never going to make everyone.
You couldn't understand the Pali chanting, maybe.
No, but I think it might have been my segues, because it's like I'd finished chanting and it's like, "Oh, okay." It's like, go back and go. "Can I have tea and coffee now?" Glenn didn't even do that bit. It was really... Oh, well, anyway, never mind. So that was my first funeral. Then afterwards, it was lovely because all these people came up and said... there was one fellow who came up with his wife and said, "Oh, yeah, we used to... I'm a brickie. I used to come up and build those huts of yours, the cooties that we have." So we have at Bodhinyana mostly brick cooties. So a cootie is just a monk's hut where we live in the forest and... we had single room, usually with a walking path out the front, and a solar panel on top, and a 12-volt battery, and a tank of water. So it's usually enough for us. But he had actually built some of these huts. It must have been ages ago, because, I mean, the last time we actually built a hut at Bodhinyana, we've renovated a few, but the last hut we built would have been a long time ago. And
did you get his card?
Hey? No, I think he's well retired now.
So
you want to rope him back in? Yeah, we've got our projects here as well. See how we go. But and then just all sorts of people came up. All sorts of people had heard of Ajahn Brahm and were always interested in what's going on. So yeah, there you go. So that was my first funeral. So you think you have to be absolutely professional when you're doing a funeral, but you can get away with quite a lot. It's all good.
How did you calm yourself?
Once
the anxiety hit you, well, you realised you were it.
Well, once I'd done the Metta Sutra, once I'd chanted the Metta Sutra and gone and sat back down, then I just sort of relaxed. I went, "Oh, I'm just going to go with it, you know." The kind of, you know, "I'm here now, so I'll just give it everything you got."
No point in being anxious.
No, no. And even if you are anxious, you know, that's okay. Just make peace with it. Yeah, yeah. Just
how
like
how many people?
There was it was quite a full room actually, maybe 30 or 40 people. Yeah, they come to see him off.
So more than you would normally get at a, say, BSWA general meeting.
Yes, I'm like a general meeting. I don't know, I've never been to a BSWA general meeting. That's all. That's Ajahn Brahm's job.
Yeah.
Or Ajahn Brahmali when Ajahn Brahm steps down briefly. Just tell the committee what's what.
Hopefully never again.
Yeah, anyway. But that's great. Now I've got a story, right? I've got my story of my first funeral. So. It was a bit random.
And no need to be anxious.
No, that's right. You know, you can learn. Yeah, you know, you can do just. You can get used to just about anything. Alright, we can do some chanting to finish off. And there we go. Dedication now.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice. May my spiritual teachers of God's great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of heaven, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing. May all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you.